while leading industrialist handshakers with presidents. Write one another, as I read the copies of the letters, saying, we reached an alcoholic gay that night because we had achieved a production schedule. Don't tell me an intelligent world with a church gone cannot laugh over such a scene as this, as they keep the bodies there and they make merry. Shall send gifts one to another, because these two prophets tormented them that dwell on the earth. After 3 days and a half, that's all God gives them. After 3 days and a half, the spirit of life from God entered into them. They stood upon their feet, and great fear fell upon them. We saw them. Can you imagine people glued to television sets when this one happens? They heard a great voice from heaven saying unto them, I can see newsmen holding microphones up. They heard a great voice from heaven saying unto them, come up hither! And they ascended up to heaven in a cloud. And their enemies beheld them. That ought to give you some cold chills. And the same hour was there a great earthquake, and the tenth part of the city fell. And in the earthquake were slain of men 7,000. And the remnant were affrighted and gave glory. You know what the Greek has it? In the earthquake were slain 7,000 men of renown, or men with famous names, not just ordinary people. 7,000 of the world's leaders. The remnant were affrighted and gave glory to God, to the God of heaven. Who are these two witnesses? I don't know. They're called the two olive trees and the two candlesticks. A tie-in to Zechariah's prophecy when he saw the candlestick and the two olive trees, the anointed ones. A lot of people say they're going to be Elijah and Enoch, based upon a tenuous verse in the book of Hebrews that speaks of a generic state of happening, that the consequences of life on this earth and the result of Adam's sin is it's appointed unto men once to die, and after death the judgment. And they say Elijah and Enoch didn't die. Enoch was caught up and Elijah went in a whirlwind. Therefore, they're going to have to come back and die. If that's the case, all of us that are raptured are going to have to come back and die too. There's some silly reasonings that go on from God's book. No prophecies of scriptures of private interpretation. I have an opinion, but it's strictly opinion and could be as wrong as that other one. Nobody knows who these witnesses will be. We know they're going to be men. They wear sackcloth. But nobody knows who they're going to be. They prophesy in Jerusalem. A lot of people think they might be Elijah and Moses, because the kinds of plagues that they have power to bring are the kinds of plagues that Moses brought upon Egypt, and that the ability to shut up the heavens so it won't rain is a kind of power that Elijah had. But I think that's an inadequate reason. God gave Elijah the power to shut the heavens, and God shut the heaven, not Elijah. So God can do it again. God put the plagues on Egypt. Moses was but his instrument, so God can do it again. That's not an adequate reason. I lean, if I have to choose a Bible character, I lean as a matter of opinion toward Elijah and Moses, not because of the kind of plagues and activity to shut up the heavens, but because they are witnesses. Witnesses of Christ with a testimony they tell. Two witnesses to the transfiguration in the Gospels are named Elijah and Moses. There were two people that were present to announce the resurrection and said he's not here concerning the grave. There were two, as they gazed up into heaven at the ascension, that said, this same Jesus will come again. But J. Sidlow Baxter and others, if I have to choose, I lean toward Elijah and Moses because of that little hint. And I lean toward them not because of the kind of miracles they do, but because of the kind of training they got. God's going to rest his whole case on two witnesses. What if they let him down in those 3.5 years? But I don't know whether it's Moses and Elijah or not. I lean that way. Because those two witnessed the transfiguration and may have been the two. Though there's no certainty, it's sheer speculation, that witnessed the resurrection and the ascension and had been trained to stand alone with God in their ministry and were there to strengthen Jesus as he for the first time began to talk of his decease that lay ahead at Jerusalem when his own disciples, three favorite ones that he took up the hill, went to sleep when he needed them for encouragement, and God sent Elijah and Moses to strengthen him. Maybe they're the witnesses. But I can tell you, they're tough cookies. And once again, the Bible shows, when you get down to the nitty-gritty of those that serve God, God can be tough as well as gentle. And don't start putting a box on the way a preacher of God is supposed to act. Leave them alone. Let them do it God's way. This witness in the middle of the tribulation is a mystery. It's God shining his light of grace. Always he keeps a light of grace shining, that in the midst of the bitterness of his dealing with his people in that time of trouble, he has a voice. It's not the church. The church is gone. There are two witnesses sent by God. And the beast then will make war and kill him, but the world will watch him rage. Then follows the seventh angel. For the sixth angel had just blown, and now the seventh angel blows his trumpet. That's in the middle of the tribulation. I'm on it today, and parenthetically, just treat the witnesses as we go by. The thing I want you to notice is this phrase that you've written down twice. Now just spin on over, and you will find again and again this word, 40 and 2 months, cropping out. 40 and 2 months, 1,260 days. Now go to the 12th chapter. We're talking about that woman clothed with the sun that I'm not dealing with today, though I intended to. She brings forth the man-child. Again, this is not the church. The woman's not the church. The man-child's not the church. The two witnesses are not the church. It's God dealing with the people in the midst of the tribulation, but it's not the church. The church is already upstairs. Then there's war in heaven. Michael fights against Satan, casts him out. Then the beast comes along, and you will find again and again in these phrases, 6th verse, 12th chapter, the woman fled into the wilderness, where she hath a place prepared of God, that they should feed her there 1,260 days. That's the sun-clothed woman. I haven't dealt with her yet, except to say it's not the church. But there's that number again, 1,260 days. That's my focus today. There was war in heaven. Michael and his angel fought. Satan is cast out of heaven, down on earth, limited in his perimeter. Woe to the earth when the devil is cast out of the heavenlies, no more access to the throne of God. Only for a season now, he is going to turn his full wrath on this earth. When the dragon saw that he was cast under the earth, he persecuted the woman, which brought forth the man-child. Again, I haven't dealt with those except to say it's not the church, neither one of them. And to the woman were given two wings of a great eagle, that she might fly into the wilderness, into her place, where she is nourished for a time and times and half a time. That's the third way in which the 3.5 years is referenced. A time a year, times 2 more years, making 3, and half a time from the face of the serpent, which is devil. And the serpent cast out of his mouth water as a flood. Skip past that because those are not my focus today. I just want to hit again and again this 3.5 year period. I stood upon the sand of the sea, the 13th chapter opens, saw a beast rise out of the sea. He's seeing Antichrist rise up, 7 heads and 10 horns, like unto a leopard, harking back to the old Grecian kingdom. His feet were as the feet of a bear, standing in the area of the old Medo-Persian bear image of Daniel. Iraq and Iran, his mouth is the mouth of a lion. That's the old symbol of the Babylonian Empire. And the dragon gave him his power and his seat and great authority. There was given unto him, verse 5 says, a mouth speaking great things, blasphemies. And power was given unto him to continue 42 months. Now we have compressed, there's 5 references in the space of 3 chapters. 42 months, 1,200 threescore days, a time, a times, a half a time, 3.5 years. Why 3.5 years? The tribulation, you will also find, is divided by the Greek words. It speaks of the tribulation. And it's not speaking in that phrase of tribulation on this earth, but the wrath of God, the tribulation. But as it compresses into half of it, it speaks of the tribulation, the great tribulation. There's a first half and a second half. Where do we get that? Go to Daniel 9. Daniel has seen the history of the world as it flows out of Nebuchadnezzar's vision. I'll run this by quickly now because we've covered it. And the kingdoms of the world are described as a head of gold, which is Babylonian's, Nebuchadnezzar's kingdom, breasts and arms of silver, the Medo-Persian two-part empire that follows, the belly of brass, the Grecian empire that follows, the legs of iron, the Roman Empire that follows the Grecian. And whereas, verse 43, thou sawest iron mixed with miry clay, 10 toes of iron and clay, they shall mingle themselves with the seed of men and shall not cleave one to another, even as iron is not mixed with clay. And whereas thou sawest the feet and toes, verse 41, Daniel 2, the kingdom shall be divided, but in it there shall be strength of iron, but iron mixed with miry clay. These are kingdoms. And in the days of these kings, verse 44, the 10 toes, shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed, and the kingdom shall not be left to other people, but it shall break in pieces. This is the stone that was cut out of the mountain without hands, that comes against the image and breaks the kingdoms and becomes a great mountain never to be moved again. 2nd chapter, that's the best glimpse God gives him of the end. That all kingdoms from Nebuchadnezzar will go to a time when 10 kings will be joined together loosely. And in the time of those 10 kings, bang, Christ the stone will set up his kingdom forever. He fills the details in a little better as he moves over to the 7th chapter. Now the image changes from a head of gold, shoulders and arms and breasts of silver and stomach of brass and legs of iron and toes of iron and clay, to imagery of animals. But it's the same kingdoms flowing. A lion that had eagle's wings, like an animal, it becomes human. As Nebuchadnezzar's kingdom becomes more humane in its latter days, another beast is going to take over. A bear, the Medo-Persian, 3 ribs in the mouth. As history is written in advance of 3 kings that will be chewed up, picturing the Medo-Persian Empire, one rising behind the other but becoming stronger. The bear raised up on one side. After it comes a leper. We just saw that in the book of Revelations. The last kingdom, leopard restored with feet of a bear and mouth of a lion. Elements of all this Medo-Persian, Babylonian, Grecian empire region. Leper, back of it 4 wings of a fowl, 4 heads, because the Grecian Empire breaks into the 4-part kingdoms of Alexander's generals. After this, I saw a night vision. Behold, the 4th beast, dreadful and terrible and strong exceedingly, called by most commentators a nondescript beast, so terrible it has no relationship to anything seen on the earth. Great iron teeth, devoured, break in pieces, stamped the residue with the feet of it. Diverse from all the beasts that were before it. It had 10 horns. Now 10 horns in prophecy take place and take the place of 10 toes. Up to that point, Daniel and God let it be known only that when the 10 kings are joined together in the time of those kings, before they disappear from the earth, the end will come. Now more detail. 10 horns. He spells it out a little better. I considered the horns. Behold, there came up among them another little horn. Now, where did the Roman Empire reach? It conquered Greece. Now, the Parthians embraced most of Iraq and Iran today, followed by a reconstituted Persian Empire. The Seleucid Kingdom, the successors of one of Alexander's generals, still held most of the territory until Greece finally fell under Rome's foot. The Roman Empire pierced into northern Iraq, Jordan, and Syria as we know it today. Out of that Roman Empire must come 10 kings in the last day. Somewhere out of the Grecian Empire, as we know it, that portion of the Roman Empire reconstituted, somewhere in that area of northern Iraq, Syria, southern Turkey, another little horn, before whom there were 3 of the first horns plucked up by the roots. And behold, in this horn were eyes like the eyes of a man, and a mouth speaking great things. And I beheld till the thrones were cast down, and the Ancient of Days did sit. And again, Daniel finds out it's in this time, now not just during the time of the 10 kings, but after one little horn uproots 3 of them, the end's going to come. I came near one of those ancient ones and asked him the truth of all this, 16th verse. These great beasts, which are 4 kings, which shall arise out of the earth, history written in advance. But the saints of the Most High shall take the kingdom and possess the kingdom forever. Then I know the truth of the 4th beast, Roman Empire, which was diverse from all the others, exceedingly dreadful, whose teeth were of iron and his nails of brass, which devoured and brake in pieces and stamped the residue with his feet. And of the 10 horns, that were in his head, and of the other which came up, and before whom three fell, even of that horn that had eyes and a great mouth that spake very great things, whose look was more stout than his fellows. Now we're to Antichrist. Now we're to that last world ruler that will be empowered sometime during the tribulation by the beast out of the abyss or bottomless pit. He rises up. He's the little horn. I beheld the same horn made war with the saints. You need to put Antichrist in the margin right there. That's where all of this prophecy starts focusing on that last world ruler. Made war with the saints and prevailed against them until the Ancient of Days came. Verse 24, the 10 horns out of this kingdom are 10 kings that shall arise. Another shall rise after them. We don't know where he's going to come from. Isaiah, passages I gave you yesterday, calls him that Assyrian. Well, the Assyrian kingdom rules Syria as we know it today, portions of Jordan, most of it as we know it today, southern Turkey, almost all of Iraq, and bare portions of Iran. He's going to rise after the ten. Another shall rise after them. That's Antichrist. He shall be diverse from the first and shall subdue three kings. That's the uprooting of three of the ten in the Middle Eastern area, most likely. He's going to uproot three. That's why all this jostling's going on in the Middle East. Am I saying Antichrist is one of those rulers now? I don't know. Could be. He shall speak great words against the Most High and wear out the saints. Judgment shall sit. And you finish that chapter, you know you're at the end of time. The eighth chapter focuses in on just two beasts. I lifted up mine eyes, and behold, they stood before the river. River Ulai. A ram which had two horns. The angel's going to interpret this as the Medo-Persian Empire. Yet to come. Daniel's prophesying during the Babylonian kingdom. The two horns were high, but one was higher than the other. Because as the Medo-Persian Empire jostled into its confederacy, the latter portion of it became stronger and ruled the other. But one was higher than the other, and the higher came up last, which is true history. I saw the ram pushing westward and northward and southward, so that no beast might stand before him, neither was there any that could deliver out of his hand. But he did according to his will and became great. And as I was considering, behold, an he-goat came from the west on the face of the whole earth, and touched not the ground, moving so fast that to Daniel it looked like he didn't touch the ground. The goat had a notable horn between his eyes. And he came to the ram that had two horns, which I'd seen standing before the river, and ran into him in the fury of his power. And I saw him come close unto the ram. He was moved with choler against him and smote the ram and brake his two horns, both the Medes and the Persians defeated. And there was no power in the ram to stand before him, but he cast him. Now, this is history to us. It was advanced future when Daniel wrote it. There was no power in the ram to stand before him, but he cast him down to the ground and stamped on him. There was none that could deliver the ram out of his hand. That's why you're going to read when the angel stands before Daniel, saying in the end of the 10th chapter, "Knowest thou wherefore I come unto thee?" The angel's talking, 20th verse, 10th chapter, "Now will I return to fight with the prince of Persia." That's not the king. That's that evil spirit that empowered Persia. "And when I'm gone forth, lo, the prince of Grecia shall come." The prince of Grecia empowered that goat that ran into the Persian ram. None could deliver the ram because the prince of Persia had been defeated by God's angels. Now the Prince of Grecia comes. The he-goat waxed very great. Alexander the Great's kingdom went all through Iran, clear across the Himalayas into India. Ended up setting the Grecian Empire at Babylon. And when you think of Greece and the Grecian Empire and the Leopard Kingdom, we're not talking about that little peninsula that juts down in the Mediterranean. We're talking about Alexander's great kingdom that reached all the way to India, Iraq, Iran, Assyria, Turkey, Syria, Jordan, Palestine, all of it. Egypt. He conquered it all and ended up with his capital in Babylon. Caught a fever, we suppose, outside of Babylon or whatever. And that was his capital when he died. The he-goat waxed very great, and when he was strong, the great horn was broken. Alexander the Great. And for it came up four notable ones toward the four winds of heaven. As following one major battle, four of his generals took over, two of which were the strongest, the Seleucids of the Middle Eastern area, keeping their capital. Really two parts, Seleucid, and the Seleucid people formed Seleucia as their capital, and Antioch, and a highway between them. And the Ptolemies to the south ruled the Egyptian portion of it. They were the king, later to be called the king of the north and the south. These four notable ones. Toward the four winds of heaven, out of one of the four, came forth a little horn. Now, in the previous chapter, 10 kings of the Roman Empire formed. A lot of people say that out of the 10 must come the little horn. That's not strictly required, because the 10 are formed, as we just read to you, and after this, let's go back and read it. After the kings are formed. Verse 24, 7th chapter. Circle it. The 10 horns out of this kingdom. What's this kingdom? The fourth beast. 19th verse. What's the fourth beast? The Roman Empire. The 10 toes. The 10 horns. After these, the 10 horns out of the kingdom are 10 kings that shall arise, and another shall rise after them.